The South Akron Youth Mentorship is exactly what the name implies. These folks mentor the youth of Akron, Ohio. If you would like to volunteer or perhaps help with a charitable donation, please visit saymentor.org and find out how you can help out today. That's saymentor.org.
Welcome to the Phil Nasons Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Phil Nasons Show. I'm happy to have you here. We'll be here for the entire hour, and we're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to talk Miami Heat basketball. We're also going to take a look at Alex Rodriguez and why so many people hate him. And we might even get around to talking about the Yankees, too. We'll also take a look at the NBA East and Western Conference seeding as it stands right now. And we're going to talk a little Oklahoma City Thunder. It seems folks are a little confused about what I said last week. Shouldn't be any confusion there. Should be obvious. But we're going to deal with it anyway. And joining me to do just that, from WelcomeToLoudCity.com, please welcome J.A. Sherman to the show. J.A., how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Hey, Phil. It's great to be here. We're fresh off of a fun All-Star weekend where Russell Westbrook had his coming out party in the All-Star game. So things are looking up for us.
Things are looking up for the Thunder. But yeah. Maybe they are. Maybe. But you know what? They have won three games in a row. And it's no small coincidence that Steven Adams hasn't played very much of a role in any of those games.
Oh,
he's been injured
for
three games.
Yeah. So he broke his hand a couple games ago. So yeah, he has not played a role in the last three big wins.
That's right. They were big wins too. But here's the deal. Last week, apparently, people were confused about something that I said. One, I said that Mitch McGarry was one of the best draft picks. Or the best draft pick, I meant that season, of that draft. He's the sleeper of the whole thing. I like this draft pick. Always have. Had he not have been smoking weed a year ago, he would have been in the top 10. He would have been a lottery pick. In the Oklahoma City Thunder, he wouldn't have to sit behind Steven Adams. But he got injured. He was smoking weed. He is what he is. Now, I also made a statement that I think that Mitch McGarry is a better basketball player than Steven Adams. Now, let me elaborate on that real quick for you. I'm a professional tennis coach for 30 years. 30 years is a long time to be working with top athletes, not little kids, top athletes. And here's what I'm going to tell you. Steven Adams is raw. He is. But let's face it. Mitch McGarry knows more about basketball, and Steven Adams will always be playing catch-up to Mitch McGarry. Now, whether or not Mitch McGarry becomes a great player in the NBA is irrelevant to this discussion because Steven Adams won't either. I don't care about how high his ceiling is. He will never, ever learn enough to catch up to them. That's why I said what I said. Okay, go ahead.
All right, well, I don't disagree with that. I think Mitch McGarry's basketball IQ, he already started out at a higher point than Steven Adams did, simply by the fact that he's been playing basketball for a lot longer. And he definitely seems to have an innate understanding about things like spacing on the court, passing angles, being in the right place at the right time. Sometimes that's just a matter of basic repetition and playing the game. So I think he's definitely many years ahead of where Steven Adams is. But I think that they're not really comparable players because Adams is a true center. He's always going to be playing around the rim. And Mitch McGarry, he's much more of a fluid type of power forward kind of player that can even maybe even go at the small forward spot for stretches during the game. He's got a good handle. He's got good court vision. He can shoot from the outside. So to me, it's not even a debate in terms of comparing the two players. So I don't think fans should look at them like that. I think it's more about them being complementary players. And that's what's got me really excited is when you put Steven Adams and Mitch McGarry on the same court at the same time and you run a basic play set like horns or something like that, then you've got some really dynamic players who can do some things together. And that's aside from the fact that Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook are also out there too. So that's the way I look at those two.
And that's just it. He has more experience. He's always going to have that. And it's nothing against Steven Adams. I think he's done fantastic. He's only played for 3 years, for goodness sakes. And yeah. He didn't play, you know, these guys like McGarry and these kids have been playing AAU and playing national basketball since they were 7 years old. I mean, there's a big difference there. You know, when I had a kid, I'll tell you this, I had a kid who was a really good tennis player, a really good hitter, but he never played a tournament. He was 17, and he came down to one of the camps, and he could hit with those kids. In fact, he could hit a lot of the kids that were playing for 10 years off the court. But when they threw up the serve and they counted and they started counting, he would get beat 6-love every time because he doesn't have the same experience. Now, Steven Adams, the only reason he's even on the court is because he's aggressive, uber aggressive. Some players in the NBA say he's dirty, you know, and the bottom line is I think sometimes he is too, but that's how he has to play to stay on the floor, and I get that. He's gotten seven players have been suspended because of Steven Adams. Now, some people will call that a skill. People who played basketball for a long time just know it is what it is, and they just try to avoid it. You know, it's easy to lose your head, I guess. But honestly, it really isn't a debate, like you said, and I agree with you. They play two different positions completely. But as far as why I say that, what
yeah,
I said,
and I think also, yeah. I think also it's not like Steven Adams has no skills at all. Like when I think of a big guy that just doesn't really have a lot of innate basketball skills, I think of a guy like a Reggie Evans who's just figured out how to stick around the league forever by doing a couple things well. Adams does have some real athletic ability. He's a leaper. He's got very good footwork, probably from his years playing rugby. And so I think as he learns the game, he will be able to do a lot of good things on the court. It's just that right now he hasn't developed those skills yet. But let me ask you this. What do you think is the ceiling for each of those guys? Like, could you name another player that they remind you of that you could say, okay, this is...
Okay, I didn't hear any of that. You broke up completely. But if there's who they remind me of, I don't really have a reminder. I don't look at them like that because, well, I'll tell you. You know what? I would see a Mitch McGarry as kind of like a Detlef Schrempf type, maybe a Dirk Nowitzki type, okay. And Steven Adams. I see him as just a backup center somewhere on a decent team. I don't see him. And it's nothing against him personally. And please don't think that I'm hating on him because I don't hate the guy. But I just don't see what you see. He catches the ball. It takes him a half hour between his catch and his shoot. My release is better than his. And mine is quicker. I'm sure of it. He is a good athlete, but you need more than that. In the NBA, you need experience. This is why these kids shouldn't be up there. He came out. He played 1 year at Pitt. Was he an all-star at Pitt?
He played 1 year. Yeah.
Just a big kid. And that's great. But at some point, he's going to have to demonstrate that he can do things other than be nasty and uber aggressive. I'm sorry, not nasty, uber aggressive. We'll call it that. But honestly, okay. I just don't see him as that talent. He's 37th right now. He's 37th among all centers in terms of efficiency. He's not that good. I mean, he's owned in 2% of all fantasy leagues. The guy averages 25 minutes a night. He doesn't do anything worthwhile for you except play dirty. I'm sorry, uber aggressive. Anyhow, though.
You can't help yourself.
But it's the truth. I mean, it is what it is. I would love to have him on my team, but I wouldn't count on him for anything else other than to be uber aggressive. I didn't say it that time, you see. But and it's nothing personal. It's just what I've seen from him is not that much. I mean, really, I don't even get curious as to why the Thunder loses when he spends 25 minutes on a night on the floor. I don't have to wonder. No one does. He's not that good, but he's aggressive and he causes problems. Anyway, they have played really well towards the end there, especially against Memphis. And against Denver, they really turned it on against Denver. And it should be a really interesting season. We've got – or a finish to a season. We've got 1 minute left. What do you think is going to happen against Dallas on Thursday?
I think the Thunder are going to come out and get a good win against the Dallas team. They almost beat them the last time they played. Kevin Durant didn't look quite right in that game, though, and their defense was pretty off. So I think that – given that Dallas is a couple games ahead of them in the seedings, I think the Thunder are going to look at that game as a really good opportunity to climb climb the standings and potentially even catch the Suns by the end of the week. So, yeah, I think the Thunder are going to come out really ready, fired up, ready to go.
Let's see what happens. It should be interesting. I think Dallas is looking for some hunger and looking for some revenge, too. So it should be fun. Anyway, great stuff today. We'll catch up with you later in the week.
Thank you, sir.
All right. That was J.A. Sherman, and you can catch him over at WelcomeToLoudCity.com, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show. Welcome back to The Phil Nason Show. It's the All-Star break in the NBA, and it's a good time to take a look at the seeds. There's only about 28 to 30 games left, depending on what team you're rooting for. And joining me to do just that, the defending champion, San Antonio Spurs blog, PoundingTheRock.com's good old-fashioned writer extraordinaire, J.R. Wilco is in the house. J.R., how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Well, I'm old-fashioned. I love it. I'm doing great, thanks.
But you are old-fashioned.
Okay.
Because when you say you do something, you usually do it. That doesn't happen very often anymore. You know?
Wow, that classifies. All right, I'll take old-fashioned. Sure, why not?
I'm the same way. If I say I'm going to be there, I usually am, unless I'm somewhere else. But I'm never somewhere else. I'm always in front of this freaking microphone.
There you
but
go.
Anyway, the West. The West is kind of crazy this year. It really is. You know, I think you and I talked about this privately. We knew that Memphis would be pretty good, you know, if they stayed healthy. Golden State, though, where do you see – they're currently – they're 42-9, JR. They've had a phenomenal season thus far. What do you see about them that – are they for real, you think? Are they a paper tiger maybe? What do you think about them?
Well, at the beginning of the season, and you know, we've been doing this long enough that you know that I don't like to do predictions – but I've finally given up because I just know that people are just going to always ask and they're not going to stop asking just because I don't want to do it. And so I was looking at it. If you remember at the beginning of the season, there were a lot of people that were slating Memphis as the team that was going to not make the playoffs. I didn't get it. I thought they were pretty strong. I didn't know that they would be in the second seed at All-Star break time. I didn't know they'd be that good, but they've been very good. In the East, I actually had my pick as the Atlanta Hawks, and that's actually turning out pretty good. So that's pretty cool. You know, like if you're being forced into doing something you don't want to do, then, you know, at least do something right about it. But I had no idea that Golden State would be leading the second closest team by four games. They wouldn't even be in double digit loss in at the All-Star break. This is really, really crazy. And it's not just that you have Stephen Curry and Klay Thompson out there, you know, just lighting the world on fire with their scoring. The team plays defense, and they've got an amazing league-leading point differential of 10.9 per game. Their average game, they're outscoring the other team by 11 points. That is massive. If you look over the last 15, 20 years in the league, the one stat that is one of the best indicators, if not the best indicator, of whether a team is actually a championship contender or a paper tiger is scoring differential. And Golden State is leading there. They're averaging 110 points a game. They're holding teams under. The teams that are playing them are averaging less than 100 points a game. And that's the real deal. Now, whether or not, are they a contender? Yes. Can they translate this win streak that they're on, 42-9, that's a streak. Can they translate this into playoff basketball is the other question. But you've got two old guys coming from Popovich's network. You got Coach Bud in the East. You got Steve Kerr in the West. And of course, Steve Kerr, you know, played for Phil Jackson as well. So he's got a lot of basketball wisdom that he's just been able to soak up over the years, and it's showing at this point. So I'm giving them even chances, but until they really show that they can translate that into the playoffs, I have a hard time picking them.
Well, I'm not going to pick them either. here's the thing with me with Golden State, and I like the people out there, but you know what? Without Andrew Bogut, they're not as good as they are with him. Mm. And Bogut is a guy that has serious issues, health issues. You know, I can't remember the stat, but it was like I think they win like 40% of the time without him, and 90% of the time with him. Mm. So I mean, he's the straw that stirs that drink, because you know those kids, they play defense, but they also can do what they do because they know he's back there bail them out. And when he's not there, you know, you have David Lee, who's probably not as good a defender as Bogut. You have the rise of Draymond Green, who is to me, I thought two of the best draft picks in the last 5 years were Kawhi Leonard and Draymond Green, and they were both unheralded picks, really.
Yep.
And they both came out of there smelling like roses because they both had coaches who were defensive-minded first, and I think that makes a big difference. But honestly, I'm not sold on Golden State. Another team, though, JR, I am not sold on are the LA Clippers.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going to happen.
You haven't been sold on them in years. Or have you ever been sold on them?
Never, never. But you know what? I picked them to. The thing is, though, if you remember, though, I did pick them to win the West this year. And to be the number one seed. Because I think that this year, I figured with the experience they have, they should really be snazzy and win the West. But they're not even. They are in danger of missing the playoffs.
Yeah, well, they're 8.5 games back of first place, and there's almost as much distance between them and first place as there is between them and the ninth seed. So, I don't know if I would say they were in danger, but they're at the bottom side of the Western Conference draw right now. But they've got what, 6.5 games on Oklahoma City and Phoenix. They've got 6 games on Phoenix, and Phoenix has lost 7 of the last 10 games. They are not playing really great ball right now. And it's not like Oklahoma City's setting the world on fire, but you can make up a lot of ground when you can win 60% of your games and then the team in front of you is winning 30. So I continue to expect Oklahoma City to eventually make the playoffs. I can see them skipping Phoenix. I don't know about LA though. Do you see them slipping that far?
Now this is why I say this. Chris Paul's not the most stable guy health wise either.
Yeah, he wears down at the ends of seasons.
Yeah, exactly. And he's now with Blake Griffin. Who knows how long he's going to be out? Mm-hmm. And we're talking about that on the fantasy segment yesterday. Who knows what's going to happen? I don't know, man. If they lose Chris Paul for any length of time, and he hasn't been out for very long this year yet, and he has never played a full season that I can remember, this is why I say the things I say. You know, one of the reasons I thought that they would win the West, though, is because of the two big fellas, Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan, getting it done. And DeAndre Jordan, I'm not a big fan of Doc Rivers. But he's right. DeAndre Jordan got snubbed for the All-Star because that kid is playing great defense and rebounding, and he scored a little bit. But I don't think it's going to be enough, and I just don't think that they're as deep on the court as they are on paper.
No, I don't. I'm not. Their bench doesn't scare me. All those guys can play, and Doc Rivers is, I think, doing as best as he can in getting those guys to gel as much as possible. But I'm like, with the talent that you have in that starting five, to be at 35-19 right now, and they didn't earn that through the road of a ton of injuries either. It's not like their starting five has played every game this year, but up until Blake went down, they'd been fairly healthy, they're 8.5 games out of first. They're in the sixth seed right now, and they're playing .500 ball over the last 10 games right now.
And that's what they're doing, and it is what it is. When you're starting Austin Rivers, there's an issue there. No offense to Austin Rivers, but there's an issue there, and it's one that you can't really solve because they need to be all together and healthy. And even then, I don't think they're a playoff team or good for playoffs. Mm. They're a really good team. When they're clicking, they're really good. Houston's another one the same way. I think they're very good in the regular season, but they're not a playoff team either. I think it's going to be – this is the teams that I think it's going to come down to that it's going to make noise. Memphis, Portland, Dallas, and San Antonio. That's who I think is going to make the noise. I'll tell you what, this has been fun talking a little ball with you, my friend. We'll see you next week.
All right, thanks.
Take care. That was J.R. Wilco, and you can catch him over at poundingtherock.com. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show. Welcome back to The Phil Nason Show. We're continuing our look at Major League Baseball teams and previewing them. And today we're going to talk about a team from the Bronx, the New York Yankees, a team I call the Spankies because I'm a Mets fan. But anyhow, we're going to give them good treatment. Rush Olson's here to make sure I do. Please welcome Rush Olson to the show. Rush, how you doing?
I am great. It's good to be here. I do have somebody that likes the Yankees less than you do, Phil.
And who would that be?
It's my 8-year-old niece, Eva. Eva does not like the Yankees. She is a Rangers fan. And if you even bring up the Yankees, it's just, she is not happy.
God bless you, Ava. Seriously, young lady, you can hang out with me anytime you wish. I'll even teach you how to play tennis, maybe, if you're really nice.
But she's actually a pretty good tennis player for 8.
There you go. You see, I used to be a pretty good tennis teacher at one time. Now that I'm retired, of course, I can come out of retirement whenever I wish, though. So, Ava, keep that in mind. I'll be showing up at some point in your neck of the woods to root you on in your continuing Yankee hate. But anyhow, there's a lot of reason to hate them this year, too. Alex Rodriguez is back. And the Yankees don't even want to talk to him. What's the story with Yay? You know, there's always a circus in the Bronx. You know, Sparky Lyle said it best. It's the Bronx Zoo. Greg Nettles, in his book Balls, he said, I had two dreams in my life. One was to join the circus, and the other one was to play pro baseball. And with the Yankees, I got to do both. And I like that. So what do you think is – what's the story with Alex Rodriguez? Because there's some funny stuff happening down there.
Yeah, you wonder if the Yankees do wish he would just go away, but on the other hand, they signed him to that contract, so it's not as simple as that. So they got him to come. I don't know. It may have been his idea. They had a meeting. They talked things through. Apparently, at some point before spring training, there will be a press conference so he can talk to the media, and. I'm so intrigued by seeing how this will work out. I mean, Alex Rodriguez is a fascinating character. He's, you know, maybe one of the best baseball players that ever played, but he's had these various incidents over the years in terms of sort of off the field stuff that have, you know, taken him from being a first ballot Hall of Famer to being an exceptionally controversial figure. And I knew him when he played in Texas. You know, he wasn't maybe the warmest player ever, but he was certainly, you know, friendly when he needed to be. And he was, you know, he wasn't a sideshow, you know, until the very end. And so it's just been, I don't know, he's just a fascinating character to observe.
Yeah, it's like going to the zoo. Not that he's an animal or anything, but
John there, but yeah.
Yeah, but seriously, the Bronx Zoo, you know, I'm tying it all in together, Rush.
Yes, I see your consistency there.
It wasn't me that labeled the Bronx the zoo. It was Sparky Lyle, and I'm just kind of like encouraging him to continue on with this. But honestly, it's a zoo there. Rodriguez is something, though, man. I never understood the Alex Rodriguez hate so much.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't get it because even though I don't like the Yankees very much, I think you probably can tell by now that they're not my favorite team to talk about. But the honest to goodness truth is I don't hate the people who play for the Yankees. I just don't like their uniforms and I don't like the way it smells there and everything else, you know, just sour taste in my stomach. But why do people hate Alex Rodriguez so much? What is it about him that they hate? Because they never liked him. Even when he was in Seattle, he caught crap.
Well, I think he came across sometimes as slick. You know, when he signed that big contract with the Rangers, all of a sudden he was first of all, a guy that was easy to envy. He was 25 years old. He was exceptionally rich. He played baseball. He was handsome. He had, you know, multicultural. He had just everything going for him. And I think it was hard for people to latch on to him personally. And I can remember thinking when I was at the Rangers that I felt like I would have liked to have done more to get people to have more of a warm feeling about him, just from a marketing standpoint, which is where I was. And that wasn't necessarily the way we did things at the club at that time. But he was, it was hard to figure why he was so disliked then. Now, as time has gone on, he's had some other things, you know, some celebrity flings, the opting out of his contract, the signing of the new big contract, the sort of the way the trade went down in Texas. That was all very odd. And then the steroids thing kicked in, and he came across as not being as genuine as you maybe would have liked somebody to be in that case. And then he disputed it, and then there was all kinds of that controversy and the suspension. And so now, you know, if you're the average baseball fan, you know, it's hard to pull out things to like about him, I guess.
I don't dislike him. Like I said, you know, I'm not jealous of him either. Because I would never want to play for the Yankees, not if they gave me $300 million and let me take all the steroids I want. And one of the reasons why I don't like them is because they're franchise. They double talk a lot. Now, this is an interesting dynamic. You brought this up off air, and I think we're going to explore it with the last couple minutes we have. Andy Pettit, another one who was using performance-enhancing drugs, who admitted it, owned up to it, and, well, never mind. Anyway, he's getting his jersey retired this year in Yankee Stadium. Now, how is it possible that they can hate Alex Rodriguez, a guy who they put out there knowing he was injured, by the way? Let's not forget that. And then honor a guy who used performance-enhancing drugs. I don't get it.
I think I agree. I think, and to me, this is a larger issue than just the Yankees. This is something that Major League Baseball has to deal with. How are you going to treat the people that use performance-enhancing drugs? Are you going to kind of, you know, blackball them like Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens from the Hall of Fame? Are you going to honor them like Andy Pettit? You know, if using performance-enhancing drugs is wrong, and I'm not saying it is, but if that's your policy and it's just wrong, and you need to really make an example out of all of these people, you know, it's not out of the question that Andy Pettit used more drugs than Alex Rodriguez did. We don't have any good data on that. You know, it's hard to know all the ins and outs and the wins and the whys, and did he do it to recover from injury or did he just do it to enhance his performance? There's so much of that that's so vague. And so, yeah, it does strike you as very odd that on one hand, you've got this guy that's a pariah primarily because of his history with performance-enhancing drugs. And then you've got another guy who also has a history with performance-enhancing drugs who's having his number retired. Maybe the greatest honor that any team in baseball can bestow is having your name, your number retired along with number 3 and number 4 and the rest of those Yankee numbers.
Yeah, especially the Yankees. You know, they allegedly they have a bunch of retired guys who are pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it is what it is. Yeah, it makes no sense to me. I really don't get the double standard there. I don't understand why they would promote that. Alex Rodriguez is a pariah, but everybody will cheer when Andy Pettit's name is announced. It's because he snitched, probably. And then who he snitched on? Roger Clemens. You know, well, you think Roger Clemens is ever going to get his jersey retired in Yankee Stadium?
He won't. Yeah, I mean, well, you look at the place he should probably get his jersey retired would be in Boston. That was where Roger Clemens did you know, the most of his career work. But you can't imagine that'll happen.
No, it's because he used steroids. You see, it's all a double standard. If Roger Clemens would have owned up to it and snitched, he would be getting his jersey retired. Andy Pettit's going to wind up in the Hall of Fame before all these guys, too. Watch.
I think because on the field, clearly Andy Pettit has a pretty good case for that.
Well, I would think so. But here's the thing, though. But he was another one of those guys who did the juice. And if you're going to exclude all these other dudes, why are you going to give him a pass if he gets in? I don't get it. It's a double standard. It's because he snitched. He came clean and ratted out some guys, allegedly. I have to make sure I put allegedly in there, although Roger Clemens doesn't even have anything to do with him, and they were best buddies, I think. So it is what it is. Rush, we never even talked about the Spankies much, and that's okay because this is more interesting because Chase Headley is going to be the starting third baseman on opening day, and Alex Rodriguez, he might be looking for a job. Rush, great stuff today as always.
Hey, thanks for having me, Phil.
All right, that was Rush Olson. You can find him over at rusholson.com, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
The Phil Nason Show will return after these brief messages.
Riveting talk radio.
People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
now.
I think it probably comes from porn as well. You know what I mean? That's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Dog radio. Bend over, baby.
That was great.
FanDuel and the Phil Nason Show have partnered to bring you a very special offer. FanDuel will give you a 100% signing bonus of up to $200 with your first-time initial deposit. To receive this bonus, simply sign up at FanDuel using the promo code PhillyFlash and go win some cash with a flash at FanDuel.com.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station, this is Epics Radio. Listen online, www.epicsradio.com.
If you're looking for a great Portland Trail Blazers talk radio show, then look no further than the Blazers Edge podcast with Dave Deckard and Phil Nasons. For weekly hard-hitting commentary about your Trailblazers and fun NBA talk as well, please try the Blazers Edge podcast at BlazersEdge.com.
Maximum Sports Channels is more than just a radio station. Phil's Fantasy Sports Blog, The Writer's Garret, up-to-the-minute news feeds, great sports and entertainment commentary, Maximum Sports TV, including professional powerboat racing, and of course, the hottest music on the planet. Maximum Sports Channels. We're more than just a radio station.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
Hi, this is Jordan Addison, and you are listening to The Phil Nason Show.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. It's time to take a closer look at the Eastern Conference. And joining me to do just that, while it's still the All-Star break, please welcome from FearTheSort.com, Justin Rowan is in the house. Justin, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Doing great.
It's great to have you here, dude. Now, we've got the top eight seeds at the break. Atlanta's number one, Toronto two, Chicago three, Washington four, Cleveland at five, Milwaukee Bucks at six. How that happened, I don't know. Charlotte number seven and Miami eight. Who surprised you the most out of this entire eight?
Well, I mean, the biggest surprise looking at the beginning of the year would be the Bucks. I didn't expect them to be this good this fast. I thought they would have a lot of potential, but maybe finish ninth or tenth. I thought basically what they've done would be what the Pistons were going to do, but that just never materialized. But you know what? They're playing great basketball and they're way ahead of schedule. And I think they're going to end up being a force in the East in about 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, 2 to 3 years. I'm waiting for the bubble to burst, to be honest with you. But Jason Kidd, we'll talk about this too. He's a coach of the year candidate, which surprises me. I don't know what they did over there. Jared Dudley's having a nice year though. But my biggest surprise it's not a surprise that they're playing well, but it's how well they're playing, and that's the Hawks. I mean, we talk about the Hawks all the time around here. Mm-hmm. But the Hawks, the way they've just reeled off win after win after win after win, and they do it without really a legitimate all-star, even though I guess Paul Millsap, they're all-stars, but you know what I mean, not a superstar, maybe that's the better word. That mm-hmm. one got me. What do you think about, like, for example, these other three teams like Brooklyn and Detroit, perhaps Indiana and Boston? You saw Indiana the other night play Cleveland. Yeah. What do you make of those teams? Do you think that they got a shot? Because they're all bunched up together there. Do you think that the eight we have now are going to be the eight seeds, or do you think there's going to be a shakeup?
I think the eight we have are going to end up being the eight we see. The only wild card that I'd consider would be Indiana, because they're going to be getting Paul George back mid-March. Indiana, I mean, they're a phenomenally coached team. They've been hanging around for a surprisingly long time. The only team, I think Miami's going to make the playoffs. I'm pretty confident that Charlotte would be the one team that I'm kind of eyeing that could drop out of the playoff picture if an Indiana were to take over. But you look at Brooklyn, Boston, Detroit, I mean, those teams just don't have the firepower to make it into the Eastern Conference playoffs.
My thing with Miami, and we'll talk with David Vermeil later on in the show today, would be the health of Dwayne Wade. I think that if he's not healthy, that team doesn't go to the playoffs. They don't have that oomph, if you know what I mean. They have Hassan Whiteside, though. He's been a pleasant surprise so far.
Oh, he's been remarkable. He's one of the best stories of the year, and unlike the Linsanity of a few years ago, this actually seems like something sustainable and substantial. He's a hell of a player, and I mean, if Dwayne Wade stays healthy, they get Chris Bosh, obviously playing at all-star level. Luol Deng's having a nice year. I can see them in the East. That'll be enough to keep them in it.
Yeah, that is a good story. I'm glad you brought up Linsanity. And it's like the alter ego of Linsanity, the antithesis of Linsanity. Man, that day he blocked, what, 13 shots, 12 shots? Was that against Cleveland? Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't against Cleveland. It was, I think it was against OKC.
Right, it was the game before the Cavs. That's right. I was doing my show. But he's fantastic. But without Dwayne Wade, I don't see Miami hanging in there. And I guess Dwayne Wade is still going to play this season. What do you think about Washington? Because Washington is a team that a lot of people thought would win the East. I still think it would be Chicago. But what do you think of that basketball team, Washington? What do you think they're missing? What do you think is the reason why? I know they're 33-21, but still.
I don't believe in them at all. I think they're a complete mirage. They've had one of the bottom five one of the easiest schedules in the league up to this point. Their entire offense is reliant on one guy creating for everyone, which is never really a recipe for success. And that person is, of course, John Wall. All of their players basically are injury prone. Bradley Beal, Dene, Gortat. They have terrible coaching. Randy Whitman, he's really holding that team back. They rely too much on Paul Pierce. They don't rebound well as a team. Their offense is unimaginative. They're a team that I think they're going to end up slipping down to that four seed. If it's a 4-5 matchup with Chicago, I'd probably take Washington over Chicago just because of the matchups there. But outside of that, I can't see them getting past the second round.
Yeah, that's possible. Or they can turn it on and make some real hay when the sun shines. You never know with Washington. They're streaky too. You know, they have those young guys. Gortat, I don't think that they use Gortat and Nene right.
They don't.
Yeah, I don't think that they do. But it is what it is. They do play a little bit of defense, though. They have had some issues, and Bradley Beal being out is one of them. That's a big problem. It's a pity because that kid's a real player, and him being hurt all the time isn't very helpful for Washington. John Wall, a lot of people are talking about him being the MVP, and I don't see that. And I guess it's because I'm just one of those haters. Maybe I drank some Haterade today, but I don't see what's all Washington's about. I don't think that they would even beat Chicago, matchup or not. I think Chicago will hammer them. And I'll tell you why. Because what I saw Derrick Rose do against Cleveland the other night, I know Cleveland was tired and it's the All-Star break and all this and that, but he played pretty well. He looked healthy. And that's the first time he's really looked healthy.
Well, yeah, he does that 1 out of 10 games. I'm not going to believe in Derrick Rose until I see him do it for about a stretch of 25.
Well, that's fair enough. I mean, you drank some Haterade today too, didn't you? But it's that cold. You know what it is? It's the cold weather.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, but I'm just not a believer in Chicago. I said before the season that I thought this was going to be the last year for Thibodeau. I think he's going to get the axe. He's a great coach, but he's not someone that makes adjustments come playoffs. Pau Gasol, I mean, he's having a great year statistically, but you can see he's starting to get run into the ground. Noah's a shell of himself. Butler's coming back down to earth. And Derrick Rose just, I mean, he's not Derrick Rose anymore. So I think with all those guys playing like 40, 45 minutes a night going into the playoffs, they're not going to have anything left in the tank.
Now, that's a pretty good observation. I think Jimmy Butler's been hurt, and that's one of his problems why he's struggled recently. But he's been a great story, too. He did emerge for the first 40 games anyway. And then
he should be most improved player in my eyes.
Oh, without a doubt. He's fantastic. He would be, you know who he would be good for? The Cleveland Cavaliers.
Of course.
You could get rid of Kevin Love, that albatross of a defensive player. But he is an albatross of a defensive player. What do you think now, Cleveland? Cleveland's right in the middle there at number five. And that's fair enough. You know, they have a brand new team now twice. You know, they started the season. They had a couple of the guys. I know that they're very happy to get rid of Deion Waiters. And the Oklahoma City Thunder people were excited about him. Of course, I had to tell them why they shouldn't be. But he's become what we thought we always knew he was. And where's Cleveland, though, with this brand new team? How do they fit in with the veteran team like Toronto and Atlanta and Chicago and these other guys like Milwaukee, Charlotte, and Miami?
Well, I think ultimately they're going to finish in third in the East. They might have a shot at second, but it really depends how Toronto does. Toronto's got a pretty tough February schedule, but they've navigated it well to this point. So if they can keep that up, they're probably going to end up with that 2 seed. Matchup-wise, I think the only team that really is a threat for them would be the Hawks, just because of how perimeter-orientated they are. Just beautiful basketball, just like the Spurs used to play. It's very tough to defend, and it would end up – they need to produce a lot of points in order to beat the Hawks in a 7-game series.
You're going to make all those Spurs fans angry when you say the way they used to play. They still play that way. They're just shots that are falling, that's all. But they're the originators of it, and it's great stuff. And I tell you what, it's going to be a lot of fun these last 28 to 30 games, depending on which team you follow, to see how it all shakes out. All right, Justin, great stuff today. We'll catch up with you next week.
All right, thanks for having me again.
Thank you, sir. That was Justin Rowan. You can catch him over at fearthesword.com. You can also catch him at arcticicehockey.com. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show. Welcome back to The Phil Nason Show. We're wrapping up an amazing Sports Tuesday. And joining me to talk about the Miami Heat, and there's a rumor that Jameer Nelson, of all people, might wind up with the Heat. And we'll talk about your favorite Heat player. No, not Chris Bosh. No, not Dwayne Wade. But Hassan Whiteside. Welcome, David Ramil from Hot Hot Hoops to the show. David, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Doing really great, Phil. Thanks so much.
It's great to have you here. You get tired of talking about Hassan Whiteside?
Not really. I think he's an interesting facet to the season that hasn't gone as expected. And it should be interesting to see how the rest of his career plays out. I'm glad that I got a chance to see it up close, in his first real breakout season here. So I think he's been a boost for the club and for fans that are kind of rallying behind, they're trying to find something to fill the gap that was left over from LeBron James's departure. So I think it's a good storyline for the season. That's for sure.
It sure is. It changes the way the Heat plays too. One of the things that I was curious about, and I'm sure that's been written about several places now, is the chemistry issues between him and Chris Bosh. Are there issues? Is it overblown? What's the deal with that?
I think it's overblown. I think they figured out how to play pretty well together. I think obviously Whiteside is going to occupy the post for the most part because that's where the strength of his game lies. So as we've seen over the last few years of Bosch's career, it'll impact his overall numbers in that he's not going to be playing close to the basket. And so Whiteside is going to get the bulk of those rebounds, which, you know, that's his forte. That's what he does. So it forces Chris Bosch to play from the outside. But again, that's what he's been doing over the last few years. He's been expanding his range. His mid-range is just as deadly as ever. I don't see any chemistry issues personally. I think they just haven't had a lot of time to work together because they've been facing the various injuries. But when you get a guy like Dwayne Wade back into the lineup where he can facilitate both finding guys on the perimeter or working with Whiteside in the pick and roll, that should alleviate any perceived chemistry issues. Not that I personally perceive them, but I know other critics have said that there might be some problems because Bosch's numbers have degraded a little bit with Whiteside being more of a focal point. But I think they're going to work very well together. It gives them a nice 1-2 punch in the front court. And I really like the way that the team has played at certain points with these two guys in the lineup. I think they're going to be a really good pair in the future, and I'm looking forward to seeing how they continue to blend together.
Well, Bosch's numbers, if you watch the Heat enough, his numbers are going down a bit, only because now he's the main option,
right?
And he's getting double-teamed, and it's a different issue, especially when Dwayne Wade's not on the floor with him. And that's probably why. You know, he's not – now, if anyone had to make adjustments, it's Chris Bosch. He adjusted when LeBron came, when they came with LeBron, and he had to learn how to be the third fiddle. And now he's got to go back to being the top fiddle, the first chair trumpet player, if you will.
Right.
These aren't easy transitions. And then you've got this kid Whiteside coming in. You've got Wade in and out with injuries. And it's a different team. Your guards aren't very good defensively, so you've got to go in there and cover for them too. That leads to fouls. That leads to being off the floor for extended periods of time sometimes. He's had some big adjustments. So I get tired of hearing – I become a Chris Bosch apologist, a Miami Heat apologist, David. What happened to me?
I don't know. That sounds great, though. I really appreciate it. I think I speak on behalf of all Heat fans to hear that. I'm glad you converted after a few years.
Okay, I never converted. Stop it now. But I just got done talking about how the Heat and the Knicks used to be a real rivalry, and I don't want Tim Hardaway in the Hall of Fame because he played for the Heat. I said, I don't want these guys in there. Forget them. F them is what I said, actually. But the deal is this. Chris Bosch is still one of the best players in the NBA. He's going to adjust around Whiteside. He's not stupid either. He knows what Whiteside can bring for him too. And absolutely, once they figure it out, and you nailed it with the injuries and all the other little things, you know, that's what you have. It's not a chemistry issue. Okay, maybe it is, but it's only because they haven't played much together.
Exactly. Yeah. And you nailed it right in the head as far as Chris Bosch and his intelligence, his versatility, not just on the court, but off the court, because I think he combines that high basketball IQ and that high IQ in general in being able to really take a step back and look at what the team needs. I saw a great interview with him and Bill Simmons that took place over All-Star weekends. And he really, you know, he talked about the fact that when he came to Miami, he recognized right away that Dwayne Wade and LeBron James were going to have to take over the team. And he knew he had to become a complementary player. And so he knew that he had to transition. He expanded his range. It was a conscious choice. And I know a lot of people from the fans' perspective see his dwindling numbers and don't realize the overall impact he's had on the Heat and their success for the last 4 years. But I think people in basketball circles that really watch the game know how much he, you know, affects the team defense and how he does the little things on offense to keep that you know, perfectly oiled machine running smoothly. So I think we're, you know, starting to appreciate what he can do here in Miami. We've been appreciating it for years, but this is just another transition for him, and one that I think he'll continue to thrive in. Especially if Whiteside continues to develop, it's going to, you know, mean less wear and tear on a player that's getting a little bit older, and you know, he's been playing away from the basket for the last few years. His game is going to age very, very well. And, you know, with the salary cap numbers expecting to, you know, bloom in the next few years, his contract, as bloated as it might seem to some people, is going to be a real bargain for a guy who's going to be able to continue, in my opinion, you know, give 20 points per game for the rest of his career.
Oh, I agree. It should be interesting. You know what's interesting, or interests me more, though, is Friday night they come back and The Miami Heat are 22-30, and the Knicks are 10-43. It's kind of strange to have both of them at the same time being under 500. It really seems strange, man, because this used to be so much fun, man. What happened?
I have no idea. I think, you know, just times have changed. You know, there was the whole Isaiah Thomas era, and then
You just had to bring him up, didn't you?
Yeah, of course. I love seeing that in Miami. I knew once he took over that he was going to ruin the franchise, because that's what he's done throughout his whole career.
And that's right, yeah. He was okay when he was a player. He was a great player. But But as a manager and as a coach, yeah, skip him. He destroyed it. Actually, it was James Dolan who destroyed the Knicks. But then you've got the Heat. They're coming back. They're still in the 7th or 8th seed. I still think they're going to make the playoffs. Once Dwayne Wade gets healthy, you know, the other thing I was thinking, I'm going to run this by you real quick. I know I didn't mention this in the show notes when I sent to you the other day, but we've worked together long enough I can do this. Mario Chalmers, the last couple nights he's played, he's really scored. Do you think that has a lot to do with the Hassan Whiteside effect, where he doesn't have to expend so much energy on defense because he's got somebody to protect the rim now?
No, not necessarily. I think it's mostly due to the fact that Luol Deng has finally kind of meshed very well, and he's a pretty good cutter off the ball. So I think it opens up the floor a little bit better for Chalmers. And, you know, without Wade in the lineup, I think we saw earlier in the season when Chalmers was really at his best was when Wade first had his first injury issue that kept him out for, I think, 9 games, I want to say. And we saw Chalmers still coming off of the bench, and then as a starter, he had a few games where he was scoring 20-plus points per game, and that was really impressive. I thought this was a turnaround point in his career. He took a step back since then, but, you know, I think we've seen that Chalmers can be a pretty decent scorer at spots. And so that's why when we're talking about the trade scenarios and Jameer Nelson, I'm not sure that he represents much of an upgrade. Certainly not over Chalmers. Perhaps offensively he represents an upgrade over Norris Cole. Excuse me. But, you know, he's – you have to really look at this trade deadline, and that's where you're going to – it's a defining point for the Heat, because you have to consider it from Pat Riley's perspective. Is he willing to ship away some parts for an older veteran like Nelson or somebody else that might be able to help out this season? And I'm not sure if that's what they're in the place to do. Excuse me.
Yeah, I guess you're right. You know, it just seems to me I'm looking for ways to get Chalmers some pub, man. I mean, it isn't easy. But this should be an interesting game on Friday, then the Pelicans on Saturday. It should be a fun second half. Yeah, it should be fun on Saturday night. It should be fun on Friday night. It should be a great time talking Heat basketball the second half of the season. Dave, we had some internet issues. It was tough, but we got through it. And you can find David Ramil over at hothoops.com. And that's going to wrap it up for today's show. Until next time, you all take care of yourselves. Be good. And most importantly,
ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you, my father thanks you, my sister thanks you, and I thank you.